Welcome to Simple Wins, the show where we talk to the architects behind the most successful B2B firms. And we're currently in the middle of a massive project curating the 2026 B2B benchmark, and we're looking for the high-level strategies that actually work in today's markets. And I knew I had to get Neil Gordon on the podcast today. Neil is the best-selling author of The Most Powerful Sentence of All Time. He is the former editor of Dutton, now a division of Penguin Random House, where he worked with the New York Times best-selling authors. Neil, a big welcome to the show. So excited to have you here.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction, Adam, and for having me here as well.
Absolutely. So tell me, why do some of the smartest, most capable people in the world find themselves twisting in the wind while someone with half their talent but twice the sizzle gets all the attention?
Good question. And it's an interesting dilemma that so many people face because they're experts in their fields, right? They've committed their careers to solving problems, often in an unconventional way. They see things going on in the world and they're like, that's not how you do it. This is the way you do it. But no matter how much they post and they talk about it and whatnot, they still hear crickets. And yet these other people who aren't bringing nearly half as much substance to their work as they are, to your point and the question, they're getting all the attention, they're getting the work, they're getting the speaking gigs, whatever it might be. And what I find that so many experts struggle with are two things. One is the message itself, how to articulate that message. And that's a whole conversation unto itself. But in the specific context of sizzle, what I find that a lot of experts don't really zero in on is the pain that the people they're trying to help are ultimately feeling in that moment. They start talking about their stuff from their own perspective as an expert, rather than the struggles of the people they're trying to reach. And this is such an important thing to do, because if someone doesn't feel like the expert understands what they're going through, they're not going to take the time to sit around and wait for them to share their solution, to share what it is that they're doing. So some people just get a lot of flash and sizzle and all of that, but other people can much more meaningfully attract others simply because they understand and can put into words the pain that the other people are feeling.
When you're talking about the pain that others are feeling, I'm curious your thoughts on this. So for example, I know the pain that you're going through, right? If you're going through this, like think of headlines that people talk about pain. Have you seen that work better where you're using like those headlines that talk about pain? Or is it more about telling the story that you experience from the pain to be able to communicate to the audience? What have you seen work better? How do you typically communicate that?
I would say that, I mean, this is probably not the answer that either you or our listeners would really want to hear from me, but it really does ultimately depend on the situation. Because what I do like to tell people is that the only hard and fast rule of communication is that there are no hard and fast rules. So I'm not going to say that a hard and fast always do the headline with a pain point. And I'm not going to say always tell your story. Sometimes your story, if it really illustrates the pain that the audience is also experiencing, can be very helpful. And sometimes a really loaded, pain-driven headline, like, are you struggling to even get started on a weight loss journey, let alone losing the weight itself? Can you not even get yourself started? That would be a good headline, because some people are just not able to even get themselves motivated to start losing weight, let alone seeing it through to the end. So there is a place for both. And I would be remiss if I said that this is an absolute hard and fast formula for future success. Sometimes it's a really good pain point in your headline, and sometimes it's the promise of something better.
I love that. That's a perfect response, actually. And I'm curious to know this, because I've known that you've worked with hundreds of speakers, if not even thousands at this point. But my question here would be, you've probably seen some hard and fast rules that a lot of speakers will try to abide by. What would you say is the golden rule that people think is correct, but you know, after all this experience, is just total garbage?
I'm so excited to answer this, Adam. I was just talking about this with a client earlier today, because he and I are working on the structure for his talk right now, his keynote, and he wanted to bring more interaction in. And the golden rule that a lot of speakers seem to swear by is that your presentation has to have interaction. I want to be very clear here. I am not against interaction in a talk. What I am against is interaction for interaction's sake, that this is not a box to be checked off. One time I went to this conference in Vegas, and it was an entrepreneurship conference many years ago, almost 10 years ago now. And the speaker there forced us to repeat back certain phrases she said throughout the talk and high five the person sitting next to us while we said it. And this was a device that I perceived as being about helping us to make these phrases actionable on some basic level, just to make sure that we're staying with her, perhaps. And that to me is interaction for interaction's sake. Your point isn't for you to interact with your audience. The point of your speaking is to empower them to create meaningful change in their life. And sometimes that's going to involve interaction. Sometimes it's not. And to think that speaking is just about checking off a bunch of boxes of all the things your talk has to have is really not honoring the fundamental reason that you're there.
Amen to that. Now I'm really curious about how you're going to answer this next one. Because one of the things that I've been seeing from speakers, and I don't know what this is, but I feel like a lot of speakers have like this concept that they have to have an acronym or something like that inside of their talk. I don't know. Have you noticed something like this where you've seen people coming up with these concepts of acronyms? And what would you have to say to that?
I'm starting to wonder, Adam, if you've been like stalking me for a while on social media, because if I have more beef with any one thing about speaking, it's the acronyms. So first of all, welcome to my head, because it sounds like you've been camping out there for a while. I really lament how many speakers go up on stage and they have, let's say, 45 minutes to give a keynote-like talk. And the thing they do with their time is they spend about an equal amount of time on each of the five letters of their clever acronym on how to solve some sort of problem. And so let's say let's use the weight loss example again. It's like five letters that spell some clever word, and each of those letters stands for something. And I have 45 minutes, so I'm going to spend about 8 or 9 minutes on each of these letters, and that's going to be my keynote. And it is so not what your audience needs in that context. That acronym, that would be great for a book. If you're going to write a short-ish book, you could spend five chapters on your five letters and delve in. And that's a wonderful place to share all of that. But in 45 minutes, what you're doing in giving your entire system throughout that 45 minutes is what we can call the show up and throw up. You are out there on stage vomiting as much information as you can in that short amount of time. But we're in the information age, Adam. We are not going to show up and listen to a live speaker, often at great expense and inconvenience, just to get more information that we can get in our pockets on our phones. We are there for change. And instead of spending all of your time on stage just pummeling me with information, I want you to convince me that I can do this. I want you to convince me that change is possible. And when we think about it through that lens, the show up and throw up is just not going to do it, because it's, if anything, it's going to have the reverse effect, because it's going to make the audience members think, oh man, I have a lot I have to learn and do then if I'm going to get this transformation. That's not what we want in such a short amount of time.
Absolutely. And now that we understand that we need to bring out the pain, right, to make sure that it resonates with our audience, we know what not to do. Mm-hmm. What would you say would be the actual steps to do? How do we actually invoke change in our audience when we are speaking?
What you mentioned when you introduced me is my book called The Most Powerful Sentence of All Time. And the reason why I really hung my hat on a sentence as my debut book, because there is this persuasion technique. There is a messaging strategy that is overlooked by almost everyone out there. And yet, when we look at the most viewed TED Talks, the best-selling nonfiction books, even the most quotable ancient quotes from ancient thought leaders like Socrates and Sun Tzu and all of that, we see a certain kind of sentence show up again and again and again. Like with Sun Tzu, he said, all of warfare is based on deception. And Ed Catmull, co-founder of Pixar, wrote the book Creativity Inc. And a quarter of the way into that book, which was a massive bestseller, he says, getting the team right is a necessary precursor to getting the ideas right. And the famous thought leader, Simon Sinek, who has that very famous TEDx talk on the power of why, on 7 different occasions, he says, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. All of these sentences fill the same pattern. They're expressed in different ways. Simon says it a bunch of times. Other speakers say it once. But the larger point I want to make in answer to your question, Adam, is that when we use this kind of persuasion technique, it suddenly lights up people's brains and hearts to think, oh, all we need to do is that one thing. Like if you were at a war conference in ancient China and Sun Tzu was on stage, he'd be like, all of warfare is based on deception. What they would suddenly get is all they need to do to win at warfare. It's not having the most weapons and the most people and the most money to raise armies. It's to deceive your opponent. And that's how you win. And when they suddenly get that, when they suddenly get the whole thing comes down to this one action that we take, this one idea, that's when people believe that change is possible. So instead of the show up and throw up, build strategically like a climactic moment in your talk to this one idea, then they're suddenly going to get it. And that's going to be what gets them on board and makes them want to go deeper, to buy the book and read the book and read all those chapters of the acronym or whatever it is.
That's fantastic. And I'm curious about, you're talking about the buildup, right? The hype to that one sentence. Are you dropping little nuggets prior to the ending? So this way, there is that concept at the very end, that aha moment. Like, how are you ensuring that that one sentence is the one that slaps, right? That absolutely, right. When you listen to it, it hits home. How do you ensure that?
There are a lot of different ways it can be done, and it will ultimately depend on any given speaker's content. But I can give one format that I'm a real fan of and that I take my clients through often, so as to really be able to make sure that, to your point, that it lands and they know it's supposed to be landing for them. And that is the what we can call a before and after opening story. That when you go out on stage, you open with the story of yourself or a client or someone else struggling with some sort of problem, and then jumping ahead, never sharing the middle part, the how it happened or what you did or whatever it was, going from the pain that you or someone else was in, and jumping ahead to the happy conclusion or the after picture, this was the transformation that took place. And then you ask an important question. How is this possible? How did we go from this to that? Well, by the end of this talk, you are going to learn the one thing that what made this transformation possible. And then there are other things, of course, I'm skipping over, but when you get to that one thing, maybe it's 2/3 of the way in, 3/4 at the very end, whatever it might be, you say, at the beginning, I promised you the ingredient that made that transformation possible. Well, here it is. And then you give the sentence, and then finally it all comes together.
Neil, where can people go to learn more about you? This was fantastic.
I appreciated the questions, Adam. Thank you. My website, neilcanhelp.com, is probably the simplest and best way to find me, learn more about me, and of course, reach out to me. And I will never pass up an opportunity to, again, plug the book, The Most Powerful Sentence of All Time, as a good way to get started, as a very short and very easy read.
Amazing. Neil, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for your time. I love this episode.
Thank you so much, Adam. I had a great time too.
Absolutely. And everyone listening, please make sure to go check out Neil's website. I mean, as you heard in this interview, he is fantastic at what he does. So definitely give him some love. Go check out his book. And I will see each and every single one of you on the next episode. Have a good one. Bye.